I understand the guy next to us, our next guest, Field Yates from ESPN, we welcomed him to the show, decided to run the 40 today.
You know, some days you wake up and you just want to achieve greatness.
Who suckered
I mean?
You into that move? Because there's really nothing good that can come out of that for you.
Well, a couple pulled hamstrings.
I said good.
It. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
But you played football, though.
Yeah, I did. But, Division III football, in
Where'd you play?
Wesleyan University.
Oh, you're Wesleyan kid. Okay, nice.
So a couple of years there. I'm not sure that qualifies as a, long and glorious NFL or football career.
What was your 40 there, and then what did you run today?
So today, I think I ran somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 or 12 seconds. I think my 40 time at Wesleyan was maybe like 4.8, maybe on a good day. Speed was never my thing. As a matter of fact, not much athletically was my thing.
Did you just clock 11? No.
I'm not sure that we actually got the accurate
reading.
we'll leave the people.
So this is great. Make it up. What was your number?
425.
425.
I almost
Perfect.
Broke Chris Johnson's go. Record. I could have been a millionaire.
I was just going to say, maybe running back. Is anybody up to that Adidas challenge? And again, if you're not aware, Adidas has a challenge out right now. Whoever can break CJ not so 2K any longer, his record for the 40 time.
Good year last year for the Cardinals.
until he got hurt.
Yeah.
In Adidas cleats. They have to be in Adidas cleats. We'll win $1 million.
I don't think it's going to happen this year.
No?
A couple of years ago, Brandon Cooks was the first player to win that Adidas competition. I believe it was $100,000 for the fastest 40 time in the, I think it's called the Adizero cleat.
Okay.
He was the fastest that year. Came away with $100,000, and I think like a cool briefcase too, which everything counts. I don't believe anybody would be breaking Chris Johnson's combine record. I actually saw him say a couple of days ago, Chris Johnson say that he was surprised it stood this long, but listen, it's hard to run a 4.4.
Yeah, it is.
That's an incredible time. To break 4.3, that is exceptional talent.
And Field, of course, spent time in the front office for both the Patriots and the Chiefs in Field. What are teams doing now, besides watching the guys in the field? We know about that. In terms of preparing with their personnel departments for free agency, taking care of their own business, looking at what guys are going to be cut loose from other teams, what's the process right now for NFL teams?
Well, certainly we have about 10 days until the start of the new league year and free agency. So
yeah.
Teams are now working hard to, if you can, get some of your own guys locked up. Teams like Seattle have got 17 under free agents. They've got to find a way to make sure that some of those guys don't have the chance to get to the open market because they want them back and those players want to be back. We've obviously, as we've seen with the Giants, some roster shuffling in terms of moving on from players, creating cap space so that when the league year officially begins on March 9th at 4 p.m., a Wednesday afternoon, if there's a player that fits the bill for the Giants and one of their needs that they've had the conversations with the agent for during that three-day legal negotiating period, you can put ink to paper by 4:01 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. So it's certainly getting to know the players on a personal level, formal and informal interviews. You're doing all of the necessary measurement checks. And it's funny how guys can seemingly grow even within like a month span. I saw a tight end had grown like a half an inch.
Really? Interesting.
Over the past 30 days. Like, I'm still waiting for my big growth spurt to go from 5'10 to like 6'2. So there's still some hope. But, the point for every team here is, and for personnel directors, is you've got to have the league memorized by the time the league year begins.
Yeah.
I mean, that's their job, and you think that's sort of implicit to the job, but that's what part of the next 10 or so days is all about.
Now, of course, you're with ESPN. You work with Adam Schefter and Mort and Polian and all these guys who are so in the know, so have their finger on the pulse of what's going on with every team. What are you hearing about the Giants, specifically with JPP, Robert Ayers, and Prince Amukamara?
I think that every team right now is negotiating with their own guy, for the most part. I mean, the good players, right? Like, JPP, obviously the last year, unique circumstances. But we know peak JPP isn't a good player, he's a great player. And we know that Prince Amukamara plays a position that gets paid in free agency.
It's premium.
It's a premium spot in free agency. And Robert Ayers, if you sign him, I think people always want the free agent signing to be, like, this is the key player at this particular position. Robert Ayers may not have to be the number one defensive end for a team, but he's a functional starting, quality starting defensive end for a team somewhere in the National Football League. So I would not be surprised if each one of those players are very much on the radar for the Giants to bring back next year. It's just a matter of dollars and cents. Let's not lie about it, right? You've got to find a point that the player's comfortable playing for and that you feel is a fit under your cap constraints. And we saw the Giants make some moves recently. They created a bunch of space. John Beeson's retirement cleared up $4.5 million for the 2016 league year. So there's that shuffling that's going on right now. And if you don't want to use the tag, because one of the downsides to the franchise tag is that some players use that as, all right, if you're willing to pay me for 2016 $8 million on the tag.
Multiply that by that times
right,
six,
exactly.
And let's go to work.
There's my number. Whereas the teams don't view it that way, right?
Right?
Some teams view it as our ideal deal for you is not that number per year, but we are willing to pay you that for 1 year so that we don't lose you to the open market elsewhere.
A la Kirk Cousins with the Redskins.
No, that would be the example that I think everybody will turn to this year. Is Kirk Cousins, in the eyes of Washington, a $20 million a year quarterback, which is basically what the franchise tag is? We don't know the answer for sure, but you'd think that maybe they'd be more comfortable, let's call it $16 million. So the question is, does Kirk want to meet somewhere in the middle? Does he want to say, my line has been drawn in the sand at $19.9 million. Pay up, or I'll play on the tag, and maybe next year you guys have a harder decision to make.
Go ahead, Anita. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just, you know, in talking to a number of people, there's also this concern that you're going to, like, I'll throw out Malik Jackson, for example.
Yeah.
Mo Wilkerson, for example. There are some concerns that once these guys get their payday, that their production is going to, that they overproduced this year because they knew it was a payday. And we talk about it in fantasy, right? You always, you want to own that contract year guy because you know he's going to ball for you. I mean, there is truth to that. But as a front office person, how do you get that information? How do you find out if I'm going to pay this guy, if I'm going to overpay this guy, because we're expecting a lot of guys to be overpaid, how do I know that I'm going to get that value back and this just wasn't a 1 year thing?
Here's the golden rule of player evaluation that Bill Belichick will impart to someone who's young and part of his staff. We pay or we draft or we trade or we sign traits, not production. We don't sign for the fact that you had 10 sacks last year. We sign for the fact that you've got exceptional first-step quickness, or you've got powerful hands, or you've got excellent length, or you've got ball skills, whatever it is. That's what you're drafting. And, I mean, let's turn this to the Giants for a second and go to the draft. If you look at Odell Beckham Jr.'s production in college, very good. But was it rare?
Not elite.
Not what it's been over the first 2 years in the NFL.
No, not even close.
You know, tougher competition. Odell Beckham Jr. has been a better pro player, stats-wise, than he was as a college player. You know why? Because the traits were always there. It wasn't as if the Giants were worried about the traits. If you overthought the production, you might say, well, you know, he only had whatever it was, X number of catches his senior year or his final year at LSU. So that's a good example of, like, you know something? I don't care if the guy had 5 catches or 100 catches. If he's got the goods that Odell Beckham Jr. has, make him your first round pick a couple years ago and reap the rewards 2 years into the deal.
And you mentioned it before. Front offices want to set a value that they're comfortable giving to a player.
Yep.
But in free agency, oftentimes, if you want to get the marquee guys, you're going to have to stretch that a little bit. And having to make that decision in this market this year with the cap continuing to rise,
yep,
so much money being out there, and quite frankly, it's a limited player pool. Every year it's limited. You can like or hate the players all you want. There's X number of players, there's Y number of dollars, and oftentimes Y is a lot greater than X.
And exactly right.
How do teams judge when they should go that extra mile to bring in that guy where you have to pay the premium, maybe above what you want?
I think the best teams are the ones that set their own market. And I know it's hard because, you know, eventually if you set your own market and it's always too low, you're not going to get good players, right?
Right.
I think the best teams are the ones that, and sometimes it takes years to build this. You've either got incumbent pieces on your roster so that if we miss out on this player, well, you know something, we turn back to the plan of development with the player that we already have. But the minute you start to lose your discipline in the free agency open market is the year that all of a sudden you become one of these teams. And we see them around the league right now. And this is a team that's been successful, but, you know, New Orleans is facing a very difficult cap situation right now. As a matter of fact, they've been sort of kicking the can with contracts. They're restructuring the likes of Cam Jordan and other players that are just sort of tinkering with the deals up, and it eventually catches up to you.
And they just let go of Marques Colston, for example.
They're eating like $30 million in dead cap space.
Is Drew in that?
It's
discussion.
$30 million cap it for 2016.
And that's one of the problems. That's why it took them so long to negotiate that contract, because they didn't want to be in this situation.
Right. And you imagine, they have $30 million tied to Drew Brees next year. I believe it's almost 25, if not closer to $30 million dead money.
Wow.
So if the cap comes in at $155 million, $154, let's round it to 150. You know, 60 out of $150 million, right? That's, you know, that's 40% of your cap is either on players that aren't there or one player. And granted, the quarterback is the most important spot, but it's why the teams that are able to show the discipline, and really I think the best way to succeed in the NFL is draft and develop. The Broncos this year would sort of suggest, well, you know, free agency matters. I think it's important to note that the epicenter of this sort of development of this roster was when Peyton Manning became available as a free agent. How often does a quarterback like that become available?
Right.
The answer is once every
15 years.
You know?
Yeah, but look at all the guys on defense now that are the free agents. They're all draft picks. Danny Trevathan, Brandon Marshall, the restricted guy, Malik Jackson, Derek Wolfe, who they re-signed, Von Miller. Those are all draft picks.
Sure, you can supplement with DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib because it's like, you know something? We just thought we've got Peyton Manning under contract for 5 years. Let's not waste our window here.
No, of course not. Let's go for it.
Make sure we go big. Whereas if they didn't sign Peyton Manning that year, I don't know this for sure, but maybe DeMarcus Ware is playing somewhere else. Maybe it's, you know, something we've got to build the roster a different way.
No question.
So, for the most part, the best course of action in the NFL is draft and develop. The Giants have been, and even the Giants in their recent Super Bowl runs, they've been teams that have, I mean, look at the core players on those roster, or undrafted free agents that turn into studs.
Victor Cruz. Correct.
Right. Eli Manning draft pick, Justin Tuck.
Hakeem Nicks, another one.
All these guys that made major contributions on championship teams, or on championship years for them. Not all of them, but a lot of them have been draft and developed players.
I got one more for you, real quick. If you have a lot of money to spend, like the Raiders or the Jaguars or the Giants, can you effectively spend that amount of money in 1 year in free agency without getting enough quality players to actually fill that cap space in year one, but also not putting yourself in a hole in future years where you're paying for these contracts 2 or 3 years down the road? Or can you structure those contracts to make it work?
Yeah,
it's tricky, right?
Yeah, in some ways. But in some ways, if you're the Giants and you've got whatever it is, close to $50 million in cap, whatever the number is, because we'll figure out once the cap is set. You know, if you feel like the play this year is to front-load contracts because, you know, we don't have as many targets on our radar, or we feel like these are the guys we have to retain, but a couple years down the road, we're gonna have to eventually extend Odell Beckham Jr. and guys like that down the road.
And that won't be cheap, by the way.
I can imagine he's going to be okay. You know, like, I feel like dinner on Odell for about a year straight.
So, yeah.
You know? So you can afford to take a multiple year snapshot. Now the problem is the NFL. So many teams have so little patience. The Giants are not. They are the trend more, or they are the exception more than the rule.
Right.
They are willing to be patient. So that helps, because if you're looking at a five-year snapshot of your cap space and you say, well, we're a little light here. Seattle's a good example of that. They've been able to sort of use that five-year window or four-year window with Russell Wilson's rookie contract and build the roster accordingly. Front load here, back load there. Now that Russell Wilson's making $20 million a season, obviously things are a little bit different. But during those first 3 years when he made like a total of $2 million, that cap situation was, all right, we can sort of envision things more than just a year in, you know, 2-3 years in.
I have two quick questions before I let you go on and
run my 40s.
Maybe try your 40 one more time. And that is number one, the free agent class coming out next year.
Yep.
Is it sexier? We used the word sexy a little bit earlier on the show. Is it sexier in regard to the players that might be available?
Well, the tag will always sort of dictate how much of the free agent class actually intrigues people. You know, this year, if we didn't have the franchise tag and you had Von Miller and Josh Norman available,
Muhammad Wilkerson,
Sean Jeffrey, Mo Wilkerson, that'd be a great class.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
By the time these tags are done, which we've got about 4 or 5 days now before the tag deadline, this class looks – that's been one of the things I've taken away so far from the Combine is I don't think NFL guys are really jazzed up about this free agent class.
Exactly.
If you sort of go through the obvious tag candidates and eliminate them. I think next year has a chance to be a lot more enticing. At the same time, if you know, we could be talking about guys who are getting the tag. We could be having the same tag conversation a year from now and say, all right.
Or you know, they could be extended between now and then, like the Eagles are doing with all their guys.
The Eagles got a bunch of guys. You got the Patriots with 4 cornerstone defensive players all during the final year of their contract.
And number two, and this is not Giants related, but we had this conversation before we started the show, and I will use the word shocked. I'm shocked that Colin Kaepernick is requesting a trade. If you look around the league and you look at coaches. There's different philosophies. One coach is, this is my system. I'm going to implement you, and you're going to play in my system. The other one is, all right, let's see what my quarterback's skill and talent is, and let me build a system that's going to accentuate all he can bring to the table. this is a perfect storm for Colin Kaepernick and Chip Kelly. If there's one quarterback out there that can play in his system, it's this. What, like, why is he requesting a trade? What do you know? What have you heard? Like, this is shocking to me.
Yeah, so I'd be curious to see, like, and I don't know specifically what goes into a trade request, right? Because if you're requesting a trade, are you saying, trade me somewhere where I can start right away? Does that mean that you have an assurance? Is it, hey, I'm requesting you to trade me, and by the way, here are my three teams that are on my list.
And are you willing to maybe work your contract to make yourself willing to another team to get you?
Are you willing to trade me?
Yeah.
And by the way, what comes along with that is that, you know, in part of this trade, the team agrees that they're going to, I'm gonna redo my deal 3 years at $8 million a year as opposed to whatever it is, 4 or 5 left at $17-18 million per year. Colin doesn't have any leverage here.
No, not really.
Colin's under contract, and I get it. But teams and agents and players can work together. But if San Francisco wants to give Chip 1 year to work with Colin Kaepernick, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if they do, all they have to do is stand by and just wait till we get to the portion of the offseason when coaches and players can work together. They don't have the obligation to Colin to trade him. And frankly, if I'm looking around the league, certainly there's a shortage of quarterbacks. But I don't look at the solutions and say, all right, well, let's take Los Angeles, for example, a team that probably still needs a new quarterback. Does Colin Kaepernick make that team dramatically better if they trade for him? I'm not sure the answer is yes.
I think it depends on the coach and the system.
Yeah.
I spoke to two defensive coordinators yesterday when that news broke, and both defensive coordinators have San Francisco on their schedule, and they were ecstatic.
Yeah.
They were ecstatic.
Yeah.
They said, I don't know. I couldn't look at our schedule and say that's a definite win with Colin Kaepernick and Chip Kelly combined. Now I know that's a win.
There you go.
Because there's no way Blaine Gabbert, with Blaine Gabbert at the quarterback position, now it's 11. It's 10-11. With Colin Kaepernick at the quarterback position, It's 11-11. There has to be a guy allotted for Colin Kaepernick, not Blaine Gabbert.
It
changes the dynamic.
Ask the Packers about peak Colin Kaepernick. You know, they saw him a couple times in the playoffs, and he ran for what felt like 500 yards. I think it was close to 300 of the two games. But peak Colin Kaepernick, if that can be resurrected, I understand the sentiment that the perfect system might be Chip, where it puts the – you know, it puts the quarterback in a spot to use his athleticism.
And, Phil, before we say goodbye, I want to get at least one comment from you on the draft class. You talked about Frazier's having to touch on the guys that are running here. Giants at 10.
Yep.
Give me some guys that you think could be fits, that you think will be sitting there at 10 and still be on the board.
So certainly free agency can dictate how the needs are.
But absolutely.
If pass rusher remains a need, everybody's talking about Noah Spence, formerly Ohio State, big-time athlete. Production's good, even though we're talking about not drafting traits for production, but the traits in the production align. Seems like a name that will certainly be on the radar at pick 10. If Prince Mukamara is playing somewhere else next season, cornerback could be a need.
Is there a corner good enough to be taken at 10 in this draft?
That's probably the question there. Is like, you know, is it a Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson?
The Hargroves kids that people like.
Yeah. And you know, they're probably, like, I'm imagining Jalen Ramsey, the Florida State defensive back,
he's going to be long by that point.
But, we're early on in the process. I'm looking forward to see what we learn over the next 60 or so days. Offensive line certainly is. Maybe the offensive line answer in New York right now is just like, here are the pieces. Let's just make sure let's just align them properly.
Right.
As opposed to we need to replace them. But, you know, that's going to be an interesting spot to see. Depth across the NFL is not strong right now, the offensive line. There just aren't a bunch of teams who not only have 5 good offensive linemen, but they've got 2 or 3 capable back. It's hard to find good offensive linemen, especially because every year it feels like we're seeing these defensive linemen or outside linebackers who are more and more athletic. It's incredible. I mean, Von Miller is like a running back out there in terms of athletic skills, and he's playing pass rusher. He's a pass rusher, you know?
And frankly, these college systems don't train offensive linemen to play NFL football either. They're playing in 2-point stances in the spread, and you're not ready to play NFL football.
You know what the first thing NFL offensive line coaches having to teach their guys some days, some of these rookies?
Put your hand in there.
A 3-point stance. Think about that. That's fundamental, you know? But and that's not a knock at the college kids, but they spend 4 years, you know, bending their knees and with a hand up. That's it. So.
Thank you so much.
Awesome
no
stuff.
Problem, guys.
Thank you so much.
Always great. Always great.
ESPN.
Try that 40 again. I'm not – that 11 time doesn't sit well with me.